Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, May 18th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Lawmaker Seeks More Study on CIRA Tax Plan. Barrickman Won't Push Legislation to Expand Area to Rest of County. By Derek Bay. Normal. A plan to expand the taxing power of the Bloomington Normal Airport Authority has hit some turbulence. Officials hoped State Senator Jason Barrickman, a Bloomington Republican, would push legislation allowing the authority to tax all of McLean County and to dramatically increase tax rates, but he will not, Barrickman said in a letter. While the expansion of the taxing district could reduce the per-household tax burden of supporting Central Illinois Regional Airport, it also would create a new tax on thousands of additional families, Barrickman wrote to Carl Olson, CIRA's executive director, on May 4th. I believe this idea still needs more study and discussion. Thus, I do not plan to advance any such legislation. The Airport Authority, BNAA, wants to expand its taxing area from Bloomington Normal to all of McLean County. Under its current levy, the owner of a Bloomington Normal home valued at $150,000 would pay $20 less in property taxes, and the owner of a comparable home elsewhere in the county would pay a new tax of $47. The measure also would free BNAA to nearly double its tax rate in the future. The authority is currently limited to levying 4 cents per $100 of assessed value, but that cap would increase to 7.5 cents, though officials have said they don't plan to increase the levy. Though Olson said discussions with Barrickman continue, without him, BNAA would have three options: drop the idea, pass a referendum, or find another legislator to sponsor a bill. Olson told the board May 9th that CIRA officials are contacting Illinois airport authorities that might be interested in expanding their tax base to suggest their legislators push a proposal that also would affect McLean County. Generally, the other airports are interested in partnering with us and joining in this initiative, he said. We don't have a rock-solid commitment, but those conversations are progressing. Olson mentioned the Rock Island County Metropolitan Airport Authority, which operates Quad City International Airport, Springfield Airport Authority, which operates Abraham Lincoln Capital Airport, and Waukegan Port District, which operates Waukegan National Airport, as examples. Maybe in the future there will be reason to make changes to our district, but probably nothing in the foreseeable future, said Mark Hanna, executive director at Abraham Lincoln Capital Airport, which taxes 12 of Sangamon County's 25-plus townships. I'm not sure this would go anywhere given the fact there's not even a state budget. Officials at Quad City International Airport and Waukegan National Airport did not respond to requests for comment. The Quad City Times has reported Molly Foley, immediate past chair of the Rock Island County Metropolitan Airport Authority, has said the authority needs to consider expanding its taxing district from 8 of Rock Island County's 24 townships to all of Rock Island County and possibly Mercer and Henry counties. Olson declined this week to identify other legislators the airport has contacted, though he confirmed they're in both the Illinois House and Senate. State Representative Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, represents CIRA alongside Barrickman, but said he's focusing on other issues right now in the House. They haven't contacted me, said State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth. However, the areas I represent in McLean County have contacted me and have opposed the Airport Authority's proposition. State Senator Bill Brady, a Bloomington Republican who also represents the Springfield Airport, did not respond to a request for comment. It would certainly be helpful to have bipartisan interest in this, said Board Member Alan Sender. The issue right now is time. This board has taken a position, but the others have not. It's possible the General Assembly will be there beyond May 31st. Whether this will move forward is very hard to determine at this point, he continued. This deals with property taxes, which is in some respects a third rail in Springfield. The next story is headlined, Detective. Millers argued at campsite. Suspect says she felt threatened by victim. By Kevin Barlow. Eureka. The Bloomington woman who stabbed her husband to death last fall had plans to run home from a rural Carlock campground after he threatened to put her in the river, according to testimony at a bond reduction hearing on Wednesday. On Monday, Sarah Miller, 31, pleaded guilty to the second-degree murder of her husband, Mark Miller, on October 16th. The judge denied a request to lower her bond, and she remains in jail in lieu of posting $100,000, awaiting a July 18th sentencing, which could range from time served plus 4 years probation to 20 years in prison. Details about the events that led up to the stabbing were revealed during Wednesday's hearing in Woodford County Circuit Court by Detective James Schreffler, the lead investigator in the case. Schreffler testified that during the investigation, he interviewed several friends and family members of the Mellers, and many indicated that the couple appeared to have a good relationship. But on the night of the incident, the two were fighting, he said. That night, the couple had gone camping with friends in rural Carlock, which they often did. According to Schreffler, witnesses said the couple had argued previously that evening, and at one point, Sarah Miller went into the camper of a friend, identified as Carrie Busick. At some point, Mark apparently saw or heard something that made him upset, and he went inside, Schreffler said. He saw Sarah take a drag off of a cigarette, and Mark then apparently threw a drink on Sarah. Mark left and Sarah followed. Shortly after that, Sarah asked Carrie to call 911. Schreffler said that when he questioned Sarah Miller later at the Woodford County Sheriff's Department, she explained that the couple continued to argue outside, and in doing so, Mark Miller had boxed her in with his arms raised above her head, resting against the rear of the camper. For the past 2 years, Sarah Miller told the detective, she had carried a knife with her because she had been attacked by a stranger. On October 16th, the athletic Miller had the knife because she was considering running back home and wanted to make sure she would be safe. The campground is about 19 to 20 miles from the couple's Bloomington home, but Miller is an avid runner who had participated in several triathlons and long-distance running events, according to testimony. She got the knife out, she said, because she wanted to scare him, Schreffler said. She said that he made a comment that he was going to put her in the river. The detective also confirmed that red marks, consistent with a struggle, were found on Sarah Miller's neck. At some point, the detective said, Mark Miller grabbed her hands with the knife and it wound up by her neck. As the argument continued, the knife blade struck Mark Miller near the heart and liver. That's when Sarah Miller asked Busick to call for help, but realizing they were in an isolated area, she asked another friend, Robert Busick Sr., to help load her husband into a pickup truck. Together, they drove him to Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal, where he later was pronounced dead. She was distraught, hysterical, and crying, Schreffler said of the interview with the suspect. She held her head in her hands and said she just wanted Mark back. There was no evidence presented that Mark Miller had previously physically abused his wife. Weapons also were found in plain view during the initial inspection of the camper. However, none were apparently used that night, Schreffler said. While Schreffler said several friends and family members of the Millers described their relationship as good and happy, there were issues. Mason jars of marijuana were found in the camper and later at the Miller home, the detective said. Schreffler testified that Mark Miller smoked a lot of cannabis and even grew some at their Bloomington home. Schreffler also confirmed that on occasion he learned that Sarah Miller would also smoke marijuana at the campsite, but he had no reason to believe that she was a regular user. He also agreed with defense attorney Stephanie Wong's assertion that Sarah Miller was worried that cannabis at home could put her position as a Bloomington High School teacher in jeopardy. The next article is headlined, "Witness in Zimmerman Case Says She Heard Shots," by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A woman who heard sounds similar to gunshots near the office where Pam Zimmerman was killed waited 2 weeks before telling authorities about her observation, according to her testimony in a pretrial hearing on the murder charges filed against the victim's ex-husband. Jody Sipe testified that she was meeting with a counseling client in her office at 107 South Regency Drive in Bloomington on November 3, 2014, when she heard a series of explosive sounds. Sipe, who was called by the defense, said she and her client simultaneously asked, "What the hell was that?" when the noise erupted. The time of the sounds that Sipe described as almost rhythmic in their rapid succession was 5:17 p.m., said Sipe, recalling that she had looked at the clock in her office. But it was not until mid-November that Sipe called Crime Stoppers with the information about the shooting. Her conscience, she said, had led her to make the call. First Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist confronted Sipe with audio of her interview with Bloomington Police on November 21, 2014, in which she put the time of the noise at 5:22 p.m. Grist also questioned the witness about her close friendship with Zimmerman's former girlfriend, Kate Arthur, and the conversations the two had after Pam Zimmerman was found murdered in her office in the 2100 block of East Washington Street, where she worked as a financial planner. According to Sipe, Arthur was upset that Kirk Zimmerman's home was being searched by police and he was considered a suspect in his ex-wife's death. Sipe denied that she discussed her testimony with Arthur. The timeline of the gunshots allegedly heard by Sipe conflicts with what police know about Pam Zimmerman's final hours. The victim's last meeting with a client ended shortly after 5:30 p.m., and an analysis of her cell phone showed it was taken from the office around 6:15 p.m. Pam Zimmerman's last client, Eldon Whitlow, testified Wednesday that she walked him out to the lobby of the building after the two ended their meeting. Whitlow was briefly scrutinized by police, who examined his 9mm gun, a weapon that matched the type used to shoot Zimmerman 4 times. Other testimony Wednesday focused on more statements people heard Pam Zimmerman make about the marital discord between her and the suspect. Talks between the couple over money issues became so heated during divorce mediations that she predicted he may kill her, according to Karen Anderson, a divorce mediator and parenting coordinator, who recalled Pam Zimmerman's statement after a mediation session in April 2012, where Kirk Zimmerman's pension was discussed. "He's going to kill me. I'm really afraid he's going to kill me," Anderson testified, quoting Pam Zimmerman. Anderson is one of about a dozen witnesses who have testified about statements they attribute to the victim during her contentious 2012 divorce and the days leading up to her death after she became engaged. The fact that Zimmerman's State Farm pension was part of the marital assets normally considered for division in a divorce made him extremely angry, said Anderson. After one mediation session that ended with Zimmerman commenting, "This will not happen," in reference to a split of the pension, the mediator said she had serious concerns for Pam Zimmerman's safety. Anderson said Pam Zimmerman decided not to pursue a portion of the pension as part of the divorce settlement. Emails submitted as evidence during the hearings indicate that Pam Zimmerman initially tried to use the pension as a bargaining tool in the divorce settlement, but she withdrew from that effort and signed a child custody and property agreement. Earlier Wednesday, Eric Yerpe, a friend of the victim, testified that Pam Zimmerman declined to push for the pension because she feared her ex-husband's reaction. Defense lawyer John Rogers repeatedly raised objections during the testimony from state witnesses who sometimes struggled to produce a verbatim recollection of Pam Zimmerman's statement. Curtis Ronnekamp was specific in his recollection of what Zimmerman said to him and his wife when they met with her several days before her death. After talking to Pam Zimmerman about their financial plans, the three chatted about her anticipation that she was about to become engaged to a man she had been dating for several months. She said she didn't know she could be this happy, said Ronnekamp. When Ronnekamp asked Zimmerman how she felt her ex-husband would react to her marriage plans, she said, "He will go ballistic," according to Ronnekamp's testimony. Pam Zimmerman also told the couple that she thought about the proximity of Kirk Zimmerman's new home just down the street from her. "When she stood at her kitchen window, she sometimes imagined her ex-spouse shooting her," said Ronnekamp, raising his finger to his temple as if holding a gun, the same gesture he said Pam Zimmerman made when she made the remark the last time he saw her. The state expects to conclude its case with four witnesses Thursday. Here's a related story entitled, "Judge Rules Against Hearing. Zimmerman Defense Had Argued 15 Search Warrants Were Tainted," by Edith Brady Lenny. Bloomington. Kirk Zimmerman is not entitled to a hearing on his challenge to 15 search warrants issued in his murder case, a judge ruled Wednesday morning. The decision came after arguments this week from the state and the defense lawyer for Zimmerman, the 58-year-old Bloomington man charged with killing his ex-wife, Pam Zimmerman, in November 2014. The defense had challenged 15 search warrants that were issued by judges who reviewed Bloomington police statements that supported the need to collect evidence from the suspect's body, vehicle, and phone records. If the search warrants were tainted because of improper affidavits, the evidence collected from those searches is also tainted, according to defense lawyer John Rogers. In his ruling, Judge Scott Drzewski found sufficient cause existed for the warrants. Zimmerman's statements to police, his deletion of texts and emails, the location of gunshot residue in his car, and an ongoing dispute with the victim over money were cited as potential evidence against the suspect. "There's more than enough to issue search warrants," said Drzewski. Rogers argued that affidavits related to gunshot residue allegedly found on the gear shift handle of the suspect's car contain a misrepresentation or purposeful lie that misled the judge issuing search warrants. The affidavits filed between December 2014 and May 2015 all contain the same misleading statements that indicate positive results for gunshot residue, according to a report by defense expert John Kilty. First Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist acknowledged that the affidavits contained some incorrect information, but lab reports attached to the search warrant applications clarified that some tested items contained only background particles of components encountered through the course of everyday life. The error should not result in the exclusion of gunshot residue identified on the gear shift handles, said Grist. The defense also attacked the state's attempt to introduce evidence that Zimmerman allegedly retraced the route where police found items belonging to Pam Zimmerman after her body was found in her East Side Bloomington office. Information collected from a GPS monitoring device placed on Zimmerman's car pursuant to a February 2015 search warrant show he drove from West Front Street to the area near Eastland Mall on February 4, 2015. The defense claims that Zimmerman was at a lawyer's office near downtown before driving a direct route to the mall area. The distance between Zimmerman's route and the location of evidence ranged from 1 to 6 blocks, according to the defense. Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon defended the state's evidence, saying the timing of Zimmerman's trip shortly after the device was installed on his car is relevant. And another follow-up story is headlined, Mellor Bond Request Denied, by Kevin Barlow. Eureka. A Bloomington woman who pleaded guilty Monday to second-degree murder in the stabbing of her husband was described as an athlete, a caring teacher, a mentor, and a woman who was patient and respectful of others during a bond hearing Wednesday in Woodford County Court. Still, Woodford County Judge Michael Stroh denied a request from defense attorney Stephanie Wong to lower Sarah Mellor's bond from $1 million to $20,000. She is expected to remain in custody until her July 18th sentencing. Character witnesses for Mellor, a former teacher at Bloomington High School, included the father of a student, a former student, a friend, a co-worker, and the mother of stabbing victim Mark Mellor. Diane Hollister said she moved from Peoria to Bloomington in January 2012 and quickly met Sarah Mellor on dog walks at Ewing Park. "She was a mentor to me," Hollister said. "She is like a second daughter to me. She is a wonderful person, and there is a softness to her. To me, she is like a Renaissance woman." Katie Aglis said she and Mellor were hired at about the same time to teach Spanish at BHS almost 10 years ago. "Sarah is my role model," she said. "She put in the time and effort to help students. She would not only work late, she would sometimes stay until 8 or 9 p.m. She would help families who couldn't speak English. She would send emails in Spanish, interpret letters and documents to help the families. She always had protein bars or fruit snacks in her drawer for students who came to school hungry." Jerry Andrew, the mother of Mark Mellor, told the court she still has a picture of Sarah and Mark when both were about 3 years old. "So I have known her for almost 30 years," said Andrew. "Her character is impeccable." Andrew said she has visited Sarah Mellor since her arrest on 2 different occasions and has also corresponded through letters. "I wanted to see if she was okay and how she was doing," said Andrew, adding, "She does not believe Sarah Mellor poses a threat to the community or her family and believes that she did not intend to take the life of her son." "They did love each other," said Andrew. The judge said even though Sarah Mellor had several supporters despite pleading guilty to second-degree murder, the bond should remain where it is. The fact remains that she had a knife that was plunged deep into the victim, which resulted in injuries to the heart and liver, he said. "It wasn't a poke, it was a plunge, and was an indication of quite a struggle." In November, the judge also denied a reduction in bond, saying at that time he was worried about Mellor harming herself because she had been through a traumatic experience. He said there have been no reports of Mellor attempting to harm herself since then. Wong said if released on bond, Mellor would turn in her passport. But Stroh did not change his mind. "She is a highly intelligent woman with a passport," he said. "Even though she has long-standing and significant ties to this community, there is still some motivation to flee." Wong said she was hoping for a better result. And we have news of some local high school graduations. First one is entitled Leroy High School. Leroy High School will hold its graduation ceremony at 2 p.m. Sunday, May 21st, in the school gym. Valedictorian is Marissa Adams. Salutatorian is Sarah Cabe. And we have information about Delavan High School. Delavan High School will hold its graduation ceremony at 3 p.m. Sunday, May 21st, at the school. Valedictorian is Chase Berkey. Salutatorian is Catlin Aaronholtz. And Calvary Christian Academy. In Normal, Calvary Christian Academy will hold its graduation ceremony at 6:30 p.m. Friday, May 19th, at Calvary Baptist Church. Valedictorian is Megan Kampfwitz. Salutatorian is Lindsay Bernink. Here are some items from today's Daily Digest. The first one is entitled, VFW Prepares for Memorial Day. Bloomington. Members of Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 454 and its auxiliary will distribute poppies and literature Saturday at the Farmers Market in downtown Bloomington and on May 27th in front of various stores. Post and auxiliary members will place flags on veterans' graves in several cemeteries beginning May 25th, with a rain date of May 26th. Community volunteers should come for instructions at 8 a.m. May 25th to 26th, meeting at the Post Home, 1006 East Lincoln Street. VFW members will march in the Bloomington Parade on May 29th and attend the ceremonies at Miller Park. The VFW entourage will then proceed to Danvers Cemetery to honor John H. Krause, a McLean County soldier killed in World War I, for whom the post was named. And another item from the Daily Digest is entitled, Salvation Army Seeks Fan Donations. Bloomington. The Salvation Army of McLean County is accepting monetary donations and new and gently used fans to distribute to community members without air conditioning. Donations will be accepted from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at the Core Community Center, 611 West Washington Street. Fan distribution will be at 9 a.m. to noon and 1 to 3 p.m. during the week of June 12th at the Core Community Center. On June 12th to 13th, fans will be given out to seniors age 62-plus and individuals with a documented medical condition that warrants a fan. Distribution June 14th to 16th will be open to anyone. Recipients need to bring a photo ID and a current piece of mail. Those who received a fan in 2016 are not eligible to receive a fan this year. For more information, call 309-829-9476. And here is a road closure notice. Bowles Street in Normal. Bowles Street between Main Street and Normal Avenue will be closed Thursday and Friday for water main installation. Starting Monday, University Street and University Court will be closed to through traffic for the remainder of the water main installation project. And here's an item from the area calendar. Books to Benefit Book Sale. 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. Sunday, 360 Wiley Drive, Suite 700, Normal. $5 preview sale Thursday. $5 bag sale Sunday. Benefits Star Adult Literacy and Youth Build McLean County's Literacy Programs. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for May 18th. Please stay tuned.